This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Terry Tempest Williams is an American author, naturalist, and conservationist. With more than a dozen books published, Williams has been called a citizen writer who speaks and speaks out on behalf of an ethical stance toward life. She recently talked with Cincinnati Zoo Director Thane Maynard about her work and her writing.
Terry Tempest Williams, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Thane. It's a privilege.
Well, it's really an honor for me. I mean, many of your books are so remarkable. Your famous book, Refuge, your lovely book, Leap. And I'll tell you what, the new one, The Hour of Land, that's quite a rocker. You know, in the 100th anniversary of national parks, there are probably a lot of books put out, but there aren't any put out at the depth and complexity that you put into this.
Well, that means so much coming from you. And I want to thank you for your brave and original work at the Cincinnati Zoo. I'm well aware of the conservation efforts that you're doing, and I appreciate it.
Well, you're very kind. You know, I've heard your work sometimes described as that in some ways you're the daughter of Wallace Stegner and Ed Abbey, and I know you knew both of them, and this book reflects that. It really does, each of them in turn. Tell us a little bit about The Hour of Land and what you've learned about national parks.
First of all, you know, I love both Stegner and Abbey, and you're right. Both of them appear to hold this spectrum of what the conservation movement is in the United States. And I think nowhere is this represented more fully than in our national parks. The Hour of Land is both a love letter to our national parks as well as a critique. And when Stegner said, you know, our national parks are America's best idea, I would argue with my mentor that it is an evolving idea, and I think it's crucial to the open space of democracy that our parks be protected, preserved, and honored in this country.
And in the book, you explore First Peoples and Native Peoples, and, you know, to someone like me, I imagined, well, gosh, we just protected these beautiful areas, and probably nobody lived there then, but in fact, that was not the case, and you talked about it in a number of parks. Say a little bit about that.
Well, certainly, when you look at our first national park in this country, Yellowstone, you know, growing up in the American West, I was told that Native people did not inhabit Yellowstone, that it was a place of superstition. Well, that's just not true. It has been, you know, hunting grounds for the Blackfoot Nation, for example, and the Bannock people for millennia, and, you know, hundreds of years and prehistoric people before that. So, you know, these are the myths that served a particular politics at a particular time. And again, the evolving nature of our national parks, the consciousness of our national parks grows as our own consciousness as a people grow.
I know in the book you also celebrated that there is a lot of American mythology wrapped up with our parks, that they might represent something to, say, someone like me that lives in a city in the East as representing wilderness and open space, but that the story can be looked at from different viewpoints.
That's true. And one of the real revelations for me in writing The Hour of Land was looking at Gettysburg National Battlefield. And, you know, it's only been in the last 10 years that you could even find the word slavery or enslaved people in the interpretation of Gettysburg. So talk about, you know, omitting a major story of the Civil War. You go to Gettysburg and what you would read about would be munitions, strategies, generals, losses, but not the root cause of the Civil War. And that was powerful to me. Also, listening to the rhetoric of many of the reenactors, you realize we're still a country divided. So I think that particular National Park Service unit highlights the mythologies that we still hold.
And it is true when you see that kind of like the reenactors, that is not a casual distraction for these folks. I mean, it is a big part of their lives. You can tell just at your first glance.
No, it's very serious. And as a Westerner, again, you know, my naivete and ignorance, you know, I thought this was a war fought the South against the North. Little did I realize this was a war that would determine whether slavery would continue in the West. So, you know, we are bound by our stories, and the stories are varied.
The perspective you bring, I think, by really looking deeply into what was the history, say, of Yellowstone, as you said, that Native peoples did use it, then it was an important area. It wasn't just a lonely wilderness. And to be honest, also, the irony of that here in our age, certainly this year we proved we've become, as a group, kind of a simplistic thinking nation. Well, you don't write simplistic thinking books. This is a very challenging book about our national parks.
Well, I think we're in challenging times, and we need to go into these deeper recesses of our history, of our own personal lives, and resist the simplification of what America is. And never have we needed, I think, look at complexity more than now. And, you know, I really think when we see this tremendous rise in visitation in our national parks, to me, it says we are hungry for this open space of democracy, to remember what it means to be human. And it isn't right, left, or center. It is what calls us forward as Americans, our deepest and highest selves. And I've really come to look at our national parks as breathing spaces for a country being smothered by distractions. And I think, you know, whenever I go to a national park, I'm met with the miraculous, whether it's the view of the Grand Canyon, whether it's the power of a place like Effigy Mounds in Iowa, in the shapes of bears and falcons, or the Rio Grande, where you realize it is a borderless country, with the Rio Grande, when I was there, shallow enough to walk across and hold the hands of the children that were skipping stones to American children. So, again, our national parks, I think, are our greatest inheritance as citizens, and they demand our protection ongoing.
I agree, and I think they are important, even the parts that are mythology. Not everybody in America is going to visit certainly every park, or maybe any, but the idea that there's still open space in America is important, and I really greatly appreciate you writing this book, and it's bigger, complex understanding of the history of protecting these lands, and especially your idea that it's still an evolving idea and important to America. I agree with that. So that's neat.
And we're going to have to fight for these, because I think they are under risk. And, you know, without our public lands, we have no public commons. And I think as American citizens, this should concern all of us and energize all of us to protect what it means to live in such a beautiful place.
We're fortunate to have those parks and be able to visit them. And we're fortunate to have your new book and the great work you've done. So I love your image that when you see the parks and visit the parks, you experience the miraculous. That's a great thing. So Terry Tempest Williams, thank you very much for doing our interview. And we would love to have you come visit Cincinnati sometime, maybe on a book tour or a lecture tour.
I really want to come to your zoo. The okapi is my most favorite animal on the planet. I've never seen one. Talk about a mythical being. And I know you have two there, right? One who is pregnant?
That's right. We do indeed. And they are a drop-dead beautiful animal. Yeah, that'll be great. Well, we'll work to get you out here, and we'll enjoy your work between here and there.
Thank you so much, Thane. Take special care.
You bet. Thank you. My guest has been author Terry Tempest Williams, most recently author of the book The Hour of Land.